It's Thursday, the 16th of July, 2025, and you're listening to Weekly Reveille here on Sun Sounds of Arizona. This is your volunteer reader in Flagstaff, Chuck Kaufman, bringing you news of interest to our veterans community here in Arizona. Today we have news from our military news websites, as well as our veteran service organizations' websites and publications, and the Veterans Administration newsletters, websites, and news. Let's start out with Stripes.com, the official website of the Stars and Stripes newspaper, for this article by Linda F. Hershey from the 16th of July. Veterans advocates, nonprofit health groups argue over merits of VA care versus private care. Washington. Professional caregivers and veterans groups argued over the merits of private medical care versus care at the Department of Veterans Affairs during an emotional House Veterans Affairs Committee hearing that examined how demand for community-based health services is shifting billions of dollars from the VA. Representatives from some nonprofit groups on Tuesday presented instances of the VA denying referrals for private sector care to qualifying veterans as evidence the federal agency is trying to curtail the use of private medical treatment. The oversight hearing was titled Right Time, Right Place, Right Treatment with VA Community Care. But lawmakers, veterans advocates, and nonprofit health care providers had sharp disagreements over the role of private sector care in veterans' health coverage. Mandatory spending by the VA for community-based private care for veterans was $6.74 billion in fiscal 2024 and is budgeted for $9.77 billion in fiscal 2025, as more veterans seek health care close to home, according to lawmakers. Private sector care represents up to 40% of health care for veterans, according to the VA. Amanda Newman, Chief Executive Officer of Western Illinois Home Care, said her home health agency is seeing a growing number of elderly patients denied referrals from the VA for home health services and redirected to a VA clinic or hospital. Newman described the case of a 79-year-old client with diabetes who must now drive more than 50 miles each way to a VA clinic for twice-weekly medical appointments after being turned down for home health care. She said some of the patients in her home health agency serves are being denied coverage after receiving it for several years. But Kylie-Ann Hunter, Chief Executive Officer of Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America, warned lawmakers that large spending increases on non-VA health care could lead to cutbacks and a downward spiral of care at the VA. Evidence indicates that community care often incurs higher costs due to limited VA oversight and varied local market rates, she said. Reports highlight that this dramatic increase in community care expenses threatens direct care funding for the VA health system. Hunter said her organization is concerned private non-VA doctors cannot meet all of the complex medical needs of many post-9/11 veterans. VA Secretary Doug Collins said earlier this month that the agency will be shedding 30,000 full-time positions by September the 30th, though he pledged no frontline jobs will be cut. The VA is the second largest federal agency after the Defense Department. Army combat veteran Megan Mobbs suggested mismanagement at the VA has contributed to wait lists, distance barriers, specialty gaps, and overwhelmed facilities. This is not a funding problem, it's a function problem, said Mobbs, director of the Independent Women's Forum Center for American Safety and Security, a not-for-profit organization. When a VA system goes 2 years without a full-time gynecologist, as was documented in a 2020 Inspector General report, that's not a scheduling issue, it's a failure of access and management, she said. Representative Maxine Dexter, Democrat of Oregon, said she struggles with having to consider funding veterans' health services as a binary choice between care in the community and at the VA. I know nobody here is advocating necessarily for one versus the other, but I think that's how it feels in this committee at times, she said. This is a fixed pie. When we take money out of VA direct care services and get it out to the community, it's a loss from being able to build up the VA care to the quality that we know. Dexter, a pulmonary and critical care physician, said lawmakers need to see more data on outcomes for the delivery of various health care treatments to better understand what works best. Newman warned community care should not be seen as a replacement of VA health services, but as an extension of it. For many veterans, especially those living in rural or remote areas, private health care is a vital lifeline, she said. Veterans who are elderly and infirmed often face long travel times or limited specialty services at their local VA facilities, making nursing care and other health assistance in the home a necessary option, Newman said. A veteran should not wait for treatment when community providers are already available to meet a need, said Representative Marionette Miller Meeks, Republican of Iowa, a former Army doctor and a chairwoman of the House VA Committee's subpanel on health. To best serve veterans, VA should pursue whatever gets quality care to veterans when they need it. Miller Meeks also pointed to a national shortage of doctors and nurses that is projected to grow as affecting hiring at the VA and in the private sector. Hunter acknowledged some highly specialized types of medical care might not be cost-efficient for the VA to retain, such as oral and maxillofacial plastic surgery, ocular oncology, and vascular surgery. Passage of the Mission Act in 2018 enabled eligible veterans to receive coverage for their health care services from doctors in private practice within their communities, Miller Meeks said. Congress closed a gap that was crippling health care delivery by the VA when it passed the Mission Act, she said. Funds previously allocated solely to VA facilities could now be used to pay for care provided by private medical facilities. Veterans are no longer stuck in line, waiting months for a doctor's appointment, especially for care from some specialist not immediately available from the VA. By virtue of being in the community, doctors in private practice are closer to veterans and their homes than a brick-and-mortar VA facility, Miller Meeks said. But some Democrat lawmakers said VA cutbacks are causing veterans to look to the private sector for their care. VA has become a toxic, unpredictable, hostile place to work, said Representative Julia Brownlee of California, the top Democrat on the subcommittee. Brownlee said, while the VA secretary has said there will be no loss of essential workers, there's turnover among custodians and food service workers, as well as doctors and nurses. She asked Hunter of the IAVA about why she believes VA doctors are uniquely positioned to care for post-9/11 veterans with complex medical needs. VA doctors have extensive training in diagnosing and treating veterans who've been exposed to toxins and injured in combat from blast injuries, Hunter said, referring to trauma veterans can suffer from direct or indirect exposure to explosions. This is a diverse population with unique healthcare needs, which includes illnesses and injuries that are a result of cumulative and compound exposures, latent impacts of blast-related injuries, and interaction of several physical and mental healthcare issues, she said. Community care is a vital part of overall veterans' healthcare, but especially as we consider rising costs, we need to be clear that the evidence does not bear out that a community care is a meaningful replacement for all direct VA care. And that's veterans advocates, nonprofit health groups argue over merits of VA care versus private care. Next from Stripes.com, we have House Committee advances defense bill with pay raise for troops, Ukraine aid, and ban on returning Confederate base names. This is by Svetlana Shkolnikova of Stars and Stripes from the 16th of July, Washington. The House Armed Services Committee on Tuesday night advanced a defense policy bill authorizing a 3.8% pay raise for service members, a boost in funding for Ukraine's military, and a prohibition on restoring Confederate names to military bases. The panel voted 55-2 to send the measure to the full House after hours of a debate on more than 700 amendments. The vote followed the Senate Armed Services Committee's approval last week of its version of the legislation. The two committees are proposing different overall amounts for Pentagon spending, with House lawmakers endorsing the Trump administration's request of $848 billion and senators calling for an additional $32 billion. The House and Senate will have to reconcile their differences to pass the National Defense Authorization Act, an annual bill outlining policies and priorities for defense programs. A Senate effort to add $25 billion to defense spending last year was ultimately scrapped from the final bill. To fund the House committee's policy legislation, lawmakers will need to pass an accompanying appropriations bill. The House is expected to vote on its version of that measure on Wednesday. The policy legislation is heavily focused on reforming the Pentagon's slow acquisition process for buying and fielding new weapons and continuing a slew of quality of life improvements began under last year's defense policy bill. Service members would see a 3.8% pay bump as well as an increase to the family separation allowance to $400 per month. The allowance, which helps offset added expenses incurred when a service member's family cannot live near their duty station, is now $250 per month. The legislation also excludes the basic housing allowance from the calculation of service members' household incomes, so more troops and military families could become eligible for the basic needs allowance, said Representative Chrissy Houlihan, Democrat of Pennsylvania. These and several other provisions should very much positively impact service members' pocketbooks and their ability to put food on the table as well, she said. Several provisions seek to improve access to affordable child care, including an extension through 2029 of a pilot program that helps military families cover the cost of full-time child care provided in their homes. The bill also builds on a banner year for recruiting by expanding recruiter access to secondary schools and institutions of higher learning and extending special pay authorities to attract talent, particularly for the growing Space Force. Other provisions establish a mental health program for cyber personnel and waive fees and copays for TRICARE's dental program for reserve forces who typically only receive military-issued medical and dental coverage while on active duty orders for 30 days or more. The legislation veers away from the Trump administration's plans for the Pentagon in several policy areas. It prohibits the reduction of U.S. troops in Europe below 76,000 unless the Defense Secretary and Commander of U.S. European Command send Congress assessments certifying NATO allies had been consulted on such a move, and it is in the national interest. Lawmakers in both parties criticized reports earlier this year that the Trump administration was considering withdrawing as many as half of the 20,000 troops who'd been surged to Europe in the aftermath of Russia's invasion of Ukraine in 2022. The House committee's legislation also authorizes $400 million for the Ukraine Security Assistance Initiative to arm and train Ukrainian troops and funds the program in 2026 and 2027. Lawmakers initially proposed $300 million for the program, but overwhelmingly agreed Tuesday to add $100 million. We have supported it at the level of $300 million before, said Representative Adam Smith of Washington, the top Democrat on the committee who introduced the amendment for additional funds. I think the urgency commands that we step up that commitment. The committee, in a voice vote, rejected an amendment from Representative Nancy Mace, Republican of South Carolina, to cut the funding to zero. A senior defense official declined to tell reporters last month why the Pentagon requested no money for the long-standing Ukraine assistance program, but said officials had reviewed foreign assistance initiatives to determine which ones were no longer aligned with this administration. House lawmakers included a caveat in their bill requiring the president to send Congress a determination that the Ukraine funding is in the national interest before it can be spent. The legislation also authorizes $1 billion for the Taiwan Security Assistance Initiative to bolster the country's defense capabilities and deter China, which has laid claim to the island nation. Multiple amendments from Democrats taking aim at recent controversies that have embroiled the Trump administration and leaders of the Defense Department were shot down on Tuesday. The committee voted down an amendment that would have blocked funding for the conversion of a gifted Qatari jet into Air Force One and narrowly defeated a bipartisan measure that would have condemned the use of an unsecured messaging platform to share sensitive information. An amendment that would require the Defense Secretary to give Congress a rationale for firing a general or flag officer was rejected in a 29-28 vote. Republican Don Bacon of Nebraska, a former Air Force Brigadier General who is not running for re-election, voted for it alongside Democrats. Republican Representative Derek Schmidt of Kansas also sided with Democrats to narrowly approve an amendment blocking the Pentagon from contravening or reversing the recommendations of a commission created to remove Confederate names from military installations. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth has renamed multiple Army bases in recent months using soldiers who have the same last names as the Confederate generals for whom the bases once honored. Hegseth defended the renamings to senators last month as important for the morale of the Army. And that's House Committee Advances Defense Bill with pay raise for troops, Ukraine aid, and ban on returning Confederate base names. Linda Hershey writes our next article from Stripes.com. VA needs to overcome history of failed IT modernization, federal watchdog says. This is from the 15th of July, Washington. Technology officials at the Department of Veterans Affairs plan to tighten its budget and reduce its workforce as it tackles modernization efforts to improve online operations for employees and veterans. VA leaders delivered that message Monday at an oversight hearing of the House Veterans Affairs Committee's subpanel on modernization. The purpose of the hearing was to examine priorities in fiscal 2026 for updating the agency's IT systems. But Carol Harris, Director of Information Technology and Cybersecurity at the Government Accountability Office, warned the agency has a long history of failed IT modernization efforts. The VA has experienced problems acquiring major IT systems, tracking its software licenses, managing cybersecurity practices, and standardizing cloud computing procurement, according to the federal watchdog. Lawmakers said the challenges affect the efficiency and effectiveness of the VA in delivering services to veterans. I've heard the VA secretary speak about how, when he walked in the door on his first day, he didn't even know how many people were in the department and where they were assigned because you had different payroll systems and different human resources management systems, said Representative Tom Barrett, Republican of Michigan, the subcommittee chairman. Jack Galvin, acting Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary and Deputy Chief Information Officer at the VA Office of Information and Technology, said, "A major focus is on standardization and ending duplication." Eddie Poole is Acting Assistant Secretary for Information Technology and Chief Information Officer at the VA Office of Information and Technology. Poole told lawmakers that his office is taking a bold and forward-thinking approach to modernizing IT infrastructure and operations. Poole said the VA's digital experience is moving on to a single modern platform. The platform supports more than 16 million unique users monthly. More than 3 million veterans have downloaded the VA mobile app, he said. The VA's 2026 budget for IT operations is $7.3 billion, a 4% decrease from its fiscal 2025 budget, Harris said. The agency also plans to decrease its workforce by 11.7% from 2025 levels to approximately 7,000 full-time employees, she said. The VA's Office of Information and Technology employs 8,205, but 1,172 workers have accepted deferred resignations and early retirements, according to the VA. The reduction aligns with a shift toward automation in which fewer staff is needed as technology matures, according to VA leaders. I think since the dawn of technology, we've used it to do things that alleviate the necessitation of manual processes and labor along the way, Barrett said. However, we can't talk about smarter IT strategy without talking about the money that VA has spent on IT projects that have not delivered as were expected. In 2026, VA also plans to invest $3.5 billion to accelerate modernization efforts for its electronic health record system. It also plans to retire outdated legacy systems for a savings of $500 million. The GAO in March issued a report that examined VA's three unsuccessful attempts to modernize its online health record system, which it uses to manage the medical needs of 9 million veterans. The agency is now on its fourth attempt. The GAO did not address direct costs from the first three failed attempts, but NextGov/VCW, a news website that covers technology in the federal government, reported in 2018 that the VA spent almost $2 billion in its first three tries to modernize the electronic health record system. We previously designated VA healthcare as a high-risk area for the federal government, in part due to its IT challenges and implementation of an electronic health records management system, according to the GAO findings. VA needs reliable modern technology in order to provide the high-quality benefits and services that our veterans deserve, Barrett said. The GAO is recommending the VA tap a dedicated team of high-performing leaders within the agency to oversee major IT changes. Harris also emphasized the importance of having a well-functioning IT system that is protected and supported by a skilled cybersecurity workforce. Poole said the IT office has adopted a zero-trust approach to managing online interactions. Zero Trust is a security protocol that requires every access request be authenticated, authorized, and validated, whether the user is inside or outside the organization, he said. Harris said it's critical for VA to get feedback from system users. Incorporating insights from a frontline perspective facilitates buy-in or success and increases customer acceptance of any changes, she said. That's VA needs to overcome history of failed IT modernization, Federal Watchdog says. Well, let's move on now to the Military Times and their website, militarytimes.com. For this headline, will RFK Jr.'s push for psychedelics help or hurt the emerging field? This is by Matthew Perron from the 16th of July. For decades, proponents of psychedelic drugs have come to Washington with a provocative message. Illegal, mind-altering substances like LSD and ecstasy should be approved for Americans grappling with depression, trauma, and other hard-to-treat conditions. A presidential administration finally seems to agree. This line of therapeutics has tremendous advantage if given in a clinical setting, and we are working very hard to make sure that happens within 12 months, Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. recently told members of Congress. His suggested timeline for green-lighting psychedelic therapy surprised even the most bullish supporters of the drugs. And it comes as psychedelics are making inroads in deep red states like Texas, where former Trump cabinet secretary and ex-governor Rick Perry has thrown his full support behind the effort. The administration's embrace of psychedelics has sparked both excitement as well as concern from those in the field, who worry the drugs might be discredited if they appear to be rushed onto the market or are too closely linked with Kennedy, who's known for his controversial views on vaccines, antidepressants, and fluoride. I'm quite optimistic, says Rick Doblin, whose organization has pursued the medical use of MDMA, or ecstasy, since the 1980s. But I'm also worried that the message the public might get is, well, RFK likes psychedelics, and now it's approved. FDA may reconsider MDMA. Under President Joe Biden, the FDA rejected MDMA as a treatment for post-traumatic stress disorder, citing flawed data and questionable research. Regulators called for a new study, likely taking several years. It was a major setback for Dublin and other advocates hoping to see the first U.S. approval of a psychedelic for medical use. But the agency appears ready to reconsider. FDA Chief Marty Makary, who reports to Kennedy, has called the evaluation of MDMA and other psychedelics a top priority, announcing a slate of initiatives that could be used to accelerate their approval. One new program promises to expedite drugs that serve the health interests of Americans by slashing their review time from 6 months or more to as little as 1 month. Makary has also suggested greater flexibility on requirements for certain drugs, potentially waiving rigorous controlled studies that compare patients to a placebo group. That approach, considered essential for high-quality research, has long been a stumbling point for psychedelic studies, in which patients can almost always correctly guess whether they've received the drug or a dummy pill. The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and FDA also recently hired several new staffers with ties to the psychedelic movement. These are all very promising signs that the administration is aware of the potential of psychedelics and is trying to make overtures that they're ready to approve them, said Greg Ferenstein, a fellow at the Libertarian Reason Foundation, who also consults for psychedelic companies. We didn't hear anything about that in the Biden administration. A spokesperson for HHS did not respond to a request for comment. As a presidential candidate, Kennedy discussed how his son and several close friends benefited from using psychedelics to deal with grief and other issues. A number of veterans lobbying for psychedelic access have already met with Trump's Secretary of Veterans Affairs, Doug Collins. What we're seeing so far is positive, Collins told House lawmakers in May. But some experts worry the hope and hype surrounding psychedelics has gotten ahead of the science. Philip Corlett, a psychiatric researcher at Yale University, says bypassing rigorous clinical trials could set back the field and jeopardize patients. If RFK and the new administration are serious about this work, there are things they could do to shepherd it into reality by meeting the benchmarks of medical science, Corlett said. I just don't think that's going to happen. Texas goes all in on ibogaine research. As officials in Washington weigh the future of psychedelics, some states are moving ahead with their own projects in hopes of nudging the federal government. Oregon and Colorado have legalized psychedelic therapy. And last month, Texas approved $50 million to study ibogaine, a potent psychedelic made from a shrub that's native to West Africa as a treatment for opioid addiction, PTSD, and other conditions. The research grant, the largest of its kind by any government, passed with support from the state's former GOP governor, Perry, and combat veterans, some of who've traveled to clinics in Mexico that offer ibogaine. Ibogaine is on the government's ultra-restrictive list of illegal Schedule I drugs, which also includes heroin. So advocates in Texas are hoping to build a national movement to ease restrictions on researching its use. Governmental systems move slowly and inefficiently, said Brian Hubbard of Americans for Ibogaine, a group formed with Perry. Sometimes you find yourself constrained in terms of the progress you can make from within. Ibogaine is unique among psychedelics in both its purported benefits and risks. Small studies and anecdotal reports suggest the drug may be able to dramatically ease addiction and trauma. It was sold for medical use in France for several decades, starting in the 1930s, but the drug can also cause dangerous, irregular heart rhythms, which can be fatal if left untreated. Some veterans who have taken the drug say the risks can be managed, and ibogaine's healing properties go far beyond antidepressants, mood stabilizers, counseling, and other standard treatments. Marcus Capone struggled with anger, insomnia, and mood swings after 13 years as a Navy SEAL. In 2017, at the urging of his wife, Amber, he agreed to try Ibogaine as a last resort. He described his first Ibogaine session as a complete purge of everything. "But afterwards, I felt the weight just completely off my shoulders," he said. "No more anxiety, no more depression. Life made sense all of a sudden." A nonprofit founded by the Capones, Veterans Exploring Treatment Solutions, or VETS, has helped over 1,000 veterans travel abroad to receive Ibogaine and other psychedelics. But federal scientists have looked at the drug before, 3 decades ago, when the National Institute on Drug Abuse funded preliminary studies on using it as an addiction treatment. The research was discontinued after it identified cardiovascular toxicity. It would be dead in the water in terms of winning FDA approval, longtime NIDA director Nora Folco said. But Folco said her agency remains interested in psychedelics, including Ibogaine, and is funding an American drug maker that's working to develop a safer synthetic version of the drug. "I'm very intrigued by their pharmacological properties and how they are influencing the brain," Folco said. "But you also have to be very mindful not to fall into the hype and be objective and rigorous in evaluating them." And that's, will RFK Jr.'s push for psychedelics help or hurt the emerging field? You're listening to Weekly Reveille here on Sun Sounds of Arizona with your volunteer reader, Chuck Kaufman. I'd like to remind you that Weekly Reveille and other Sun Sounds of Arizona programming is available on the Sun Sounds of Arizona website at sunsounds.org. Not only can you listen to Sun Sounds as it streams, but you can select the programming that you're interested in and listen to it at a time of your choosing. That option is also available on the Sun Sounds of Arizona app, which is now available for the iPad or iPhone from the Apple App Store, or for your Android phone or tablet from the Google Play Store. And you can also listen to Sun Sounds of Arizona streaming on your Amazon Dot or Echo. We have an article now from the VFW magazine from July and August, and it's entitled, "I Was Trying to Find Something Beautiful." From designing football helmets to championship murals, one VFW senior vice commander brings his artistic prowess to the world of sports. Ever since he was in kindergarten, Armando Villarreal knew he was an artist. In the first grade, he began submitting his works to a state art show in Nebraska. Now serving as a senior vice commander at VFW Post 4688 in Imperial, Nebraska, Villarreal is asked to design helmets for entire college football programs. While on active duty 25 years ago, Villarreal found time to create art. Between 2000 and 2001, during his time at Camp Bondsteel in southeastern Kosovo, Villarreal worked as a supply sergeant for one of the hospitals on camp. It was here he witnessed several mass casualty patients from a bus explosion being transported into the camp and treated. Villarreal would go on to create a painting inspired by this experience. "I guess looking back on it, it was therapy," Villarreal said. "I was trying to find something beautiful, in a way, from something that was not so great." After serving with the 855th Quartermaster Company in Iraq, Villarreal would later go on to create a convoy painting inspired by 14 different photographs taken in Iraq. An airbrush maestro. In 2018, Villarreal began his first project using an airbrush to paint football helmets. He worked closely with the Mississippi State's football program to design helmets in tribute to former U.S. Representative Gillespie V. Sonny Montgomery. With a sleek metallic look, the helmets looked like they were made straight from a plane's hull. Other schools began to reach out to Villarreal, and he soon had to switch over to painting full-time. 8 months out of the year became dedicated to helmets and football teams, Villarreal said. "The rest of the time is reserved for personal art and stuff I like to create." In 2020, he created a moon helmet for the University of Central Florida and a tribute helmet for the USS Salt Lake City for the University of Utah. This design is special for Villarreal as it reminds him of his grandfather, a VFW Life member who served in World War II. The University of Utah would again reach out to Villarreal in 2022 and ask him to design another helmet for the team. After the passing of Utah Utes players Ty Jordan and Aaron Lowe, the university wanted to honor their memories with their portraits painted on each side of the helmet. A job requiring much finer airbrush detail, Villarreal knew it would be a daunting task. He accepted. With help from his wife Laura and their kids, the helmets became a massive success. A short documentary titled Good Enough was done on Villarreal and his process painting the tribute helmets to Jordan and Lowe. The documentary would go on to win a Rocky Mountain Regional Emmy Award. He and his family were also later brought out onto the Utah Utes football field during a game to be recognized. Villarreal still paints helmets for college football programs today. Currently, he's coming up with concepts for snowmobile helmets to honor a search and rescue team from Wasatch County, Utah. He also designs concepts for shoes and t-shirts for Warrior Rising, a nonprofit organization for veterans with whom he's affiliated. His love for sports does not end with college football. Villarreal has also painted murals for the Kansas City Royals 2015 World Series win, as well as a mural for Derek Jeter's retirement in 2014. As a senior vice commander of Post 4688, Villarreal is involved with color guards, assists with funerals, and acts as a representative of the VFW for public events such as parades and baseball games. His favorite works that he has done are one of a helicopter and the convoy painting he created from the 14 photographs. That article, I Was Trying to Find Something Beautiful, from the VFW magazine. Our next item is from taskandpurpose.com. Louisiana National Guard Base to be renamed for Confederate General's dad. The name of the Confederate General was removed from the base in 2023, but will be restored this time with his father as the namesake. This article is by Matt White from the 15th of July. Following a string of wink and a nod restorations of Confederate names to nine Army bases, the governor of Louisiana dispensed with nuance Monday and returned the family name of a Confederate general to the state's major National Guard training base by invoking the namesake's father. Camp Beauregard, which was named for Confederate General Pierre Gustave Tauton Beauregard prior to 2023, will now be named for his father, Jacques Tauton Beauregard, local Louisiana media first reported. The elder Beauregard raised Pierre on the family's Contreras plantation, where fields were worked by slave labor prior to the Civil War. Louisiana Governor Jeff Landry ordered the name change Monday to the Louisiana National Guard Training Center, Pineville, which was given that name in 2023, amid the removal of Confederate names from nine Army bases across the country, like Fort Bragg and Fort Benning. Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth ordered all nine of those names restored this year. The statement from the Louisiana Guard announcing the base's reversion to Camp Beauregard does not note that the two men were related. Jacques Beauregard served in the Louisiana militia and fought in the 1815 Battle of New Orleans, the final major conflict of the War of 1812, according to the Guard. In that battle, outnumbered U.S. troops led by future President Andrew Jackson repulsed a British force sent to capture the city's port. In a statement, Landry said, "By restoring the name Camp Beauregard, we honor a legacy of courage and service that dates back over two centuries." The elder Beauregard, according to Landry, stood at the front lines in defense of New Orleans during one of our nation's most defining battles. Designer of the Stars and Bars flag. The base's original namesake, the younger Beauregard, is perhaps best remembered as a key voice in the design and adoption of the Confederate battle flag, and for commanding the Confederate troops in the war's first skirmish. Beauregard graduated from the U.S. Military Academy at West Point, New York in 1838, Several sites claim he was second in his class of 45 students and spent his post-Civil War career as a businessman in New Orleans with notably pro-civil rights views for newly freed black Americans, according to a website run by the Virginia Humanities at the University of Virginia. As a Civil War general for the Confederacy, Beauregard could be said to have fired the war's first shot as the commander of the Confederate siege of Fort Sumter in Charleston, South Carolina in 1861. Beauregard captured the fort, accepting the surrender of U.S. Army Major Robert Anderson, who had been an instructor over Beauregard at West Point. Beauregard led troops throughout the war, though historical views on his battlefield acumen do not generally rank him among the conflict's top leaders. Renaming and re-renaming. The short-lived removal of Confederate names from Army bases came to an end this year when Hegseth ordered the names of all 9 federal installations restored under the names of unrelated former soldiers who shared the same last name as each base's original Confederate namesakes. Bragg was renamed for PFC Roland L. Bragg, a World War II paratrooper who earned a Silver Star in the Battle of Bulge. Benning is now named for a soldier who earned a Distinguished Service Cross in World War I and later served as mayor of a small Nebraska town. While in that role, he accidentally shot a fellow city council member when examining a handgun during the meeting. Landry's statement on the renaming of Beauregard noted skepticism of the 2023 renaming efforts. Let this also be a lesson that we should always give reverence to history and not be quick to so easily condemn or erase the dead, lest we and our times be judged arbitrary by future generations, Landry said. That's Louisiana National Guard Base to be renamed for Confederate General's Dad. Well, let's go on to the Veterans Administration. And the first item are some announcements from the Phoenix VA healthcare system from their newsletter, Veterans News Now. And our first item is national observances. July is National Parks and Recreation Month. All veterans are eligible for a free lifetime pass to U.S. national parks, hiking, biking, fishing, camping, and more. To obtain a pass, just go to nps.gov, or you can actually use the National Park Service app. Next, limit alcohol. Thinking about your drinking? Limit alcohol intake for a better life. As we gather this summer, it's essential to remember the impact of alcohol on our physical and mental health. Whether you're enjoying a barbecue with friends, a family reunion, or simply relaxing on your porch, make mindful choices about alcohol consumption. Why limiting alcohol is essential for veterans. Physical health. Excessive alcohol use can lead to chronic health conditions such as liver disease, high blood pressure, and an increased risk of certain cancers. By limiting your intake, you can safeguard your body from these harmful effects and maintain your overall well-being. Mental health. Many veterans face unique challenges, including PTSD and depression. Alcohol can affect these conditions, disrupting sleep patterns, increasing anxiety, and leading to more severe mental health issues. Reducing alcohol consumption can help stabilize your mood and improve emotional resilience. Medication interactions. If you're taking medication for any health conditions, alcohol can interfere with their effectiveness and cause adverse reactions. Always consult with your health care provider or pharmacist about safe alcohol consumption in combination with any prescribed medications. Social and family relationships. The quality of our relationships can be significantly impacted by our drinking habits. Limiting alcohol can help you maintain strong, healthy connections with loved ones and foster a supportive community around you. Tips for limiting alcohol. Set limits. Decide in advance how many drinks you'll have and stick to your limit. Find alternatives. Enjoy flavorful non-alcoholic drinks, such as sparkling water with a splash of juice or a refreshing mocktail. Stay active. Engage in activities that don't center around alcohol, such as hobbies, physical activities, or volunteering. Talk with your VA healthcare team if you have questions about limiting alcohol or are concerned about your drinking. They can help you reduce risky drinking. Alcohol dependence can be treated. And you have resources in the Veterans Health Library on limiting alcohol, alcohol use disorder and treatment options, and from the National Institute on Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism, the NIAAA, alcohol's effect on health, and from the VHA, National Center for PTSD, PTSD and problems with alcohol use. Then from VA News, they mentioned getting veterans off the street, a new step toward ending veteran homelessness. Targeted outreach events connect unsheltered veterans to housing and support. Too many veterans are surviving in places not meant for human habitation, under bridges, in parked cars, or in encampments tucked out of sight. They deserve more than survival. They deserve a path home. To help make that a reality, VA has launched Getting Veterans Off the Street, a nationwide initiative focused on reaching and housing veterans experiencing unsheltered homelessness. Every VA medical center is hosting at least one outreach event between now and September 30, 2025, to move unsheltered veterans into interim or permanent housing. What is unsheltered homelessness? In contrast to sheltered homelessness, where people live in emergency shelters and other temporary settings, unsheltered homelessness refers to people sleeping outdoors, in public spaces like streets, parks, or under bridges, or in locations not meant for habitation, like vehicles, tents, or abandoned buildings. Unsheltered homelessness is one of the most dangerous situations a person can face. It can severely harm one's whole health, mind, body, and soul. When a veteran is unsheltered, there's no time to delay getting them to a safe place and quickly on a path to permanent, stable housing. Outreach with intention. During these events, VA and our partners go out into our communities all across America to find unsheltered veterans wherever they are. For example, in encampments, on the streets, in the woods, under bridges, to offer them immediate enrollment in housing programs, health care, behavioral health services, and VA benefits, all in real time. Then they announce a new app helps veterans recover from stroke. This new app helps veterans recover from stroke. Stroke Recovery app provides virtual support and care. Veterans need peer support, someone who's been there and gets it and can help. After leaving the military, many veterans face loneliness and isolation. The camaraderie and sense of purpose can slip away, leaving a quiet gap that's tough to fill. Since 2011, Vets for Warriors has offered free, confidential peer support 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, every day of the year. The Vets for Warriors team, mostly veterans themselves, understands because they've lived it. They've connected with hundreds of thousands from the military community, including more than 8,400 people who reached out for the first time just this past year. Since starting, Vets for Warriors has had over 955,000 contacts. Veterans can reach Vets for Warriors anytime at 855-838-8255. Calls are answered live in less than 30 seconds, ensuring that no one must wait in a moment of need. Support is available for veterans of all ages and eras, including support for active duty members, National Guard, reservists, and their families. Whether it's a quick check-in or a longer talk, Vets for Warriors is ready to listen, stay with you, follow up, and connect you to the right resources, from mental health guidance to job support or community programs that can meet your needs. That early connection can keep problems and loneliness from turning into something bigger. That number again is 855-838-8255. More about Vets for Warriors. Vets for Warriors, and that's V-E-T-S, the number 4, W-A-R-R-I-O-R-S, housed at Rutgers University Behavioral Healthcare National Call Center, is one of a kind 24/7 peer support network. Callers can be assured that everything they share with Vets for Warriors staff will always remain 100% confidential. The program complements other resources available to vet service members, veterans, family members, and caregivers, but remains separate from them. This allows Vets for Warriors to ensure that our callers have every confidence that we work with them to identify the best available resource, no matter what their needs may be. If you want to connect with Vets for Warriors, again, that number, 855-838-8255, or you can actually chat online by going to their website at www.vets4warriors, and that's all together, there's no spaces, .com. And peer support staff are standing by 24/7, 365 days a year. And that's 24/7 peer support for veterans, 365 days a year. Next from the newsletter, we have Lunch and Learn, Unpacking Sexual Health Stigma Together. Join us for a Lunch and Learn focused on the roots and impact of stigma in LGBTQ plus sexual health and explore ways to foster understanding, resilience, and change, both personally and institutionally. This is on the 22nd of July, 2025 at 11 a.m. and that will be at 1101 North Central Avenue, Phoenix, Arizona, 85004. There you can learn about types of stigma and their impact, stigma around sex, HIV, and pre-exposure prophylaxis, identifying personal and institutional actions to address stigma, and online resources on stigma and its intersection with LGBTQ plus health, mental health, and substance use, local HIV and PrEP epidemiology data. Next, under our miscellaneous, they have Seeking Nominations for Veterans to Serve as Grand Marshals in the Honoring America's Veterans Day Parade. Don't forget to nominate a hero. Arizona veterans from all eras are eligible. Honoring America's Veterans, HAV, invites Arizonans to nominate veterans to serve as Grand Marshals in the 2025 HAV Veterans Day Parade in Phoenix. This is part of HAV's signature Honor Our Heroes program, a heartfelt call to recognize those who served with honor, courage, and sacrifice. Veterans from seven eras of conflict will be selected to represent their fellow brothers and sisters in arms. Nominees must be Arizona residents with honorable discharges. Winners will receive special recognition in the parade, in HAV publications, on the website, and through local media. Nominator will be invited to attend the event where their marshals will be featured. Deadline to nominate is July the 31st, 2025, and they can be submitted at Honoring America's Veterans, that's all one word, honoringamericasveterans.org/honor-our-heroes. Next, we have Women's Veterans Breakfast Gathering Meetup. Dear veterans, Kailani Dardis is looking for women veterans who may wish to meet up for breakfast. To be the last Saturday of the month at the Soul Cafe, 8 a.m. Space for veterans only, and you can RSVP for sure seatings, and that's at 7615 East Pinnacle Peak Road, #1, Scottsdale, Arizona, 85255. And every Tuesday, they have an OEB breakfast at 8 a.m. Veterans and guests are okay. And that's at 17757 North Scottsdale Road, number 103, Scottsdale, Arizona, 85255. And you can text an RSVP to 520-800-3985. So that's a text to 520-800-3985. And that's some information and announcements from the Veterans News Now newsletter from the Phoenix VA healthcare system. We have time for one more item. This from news.va.gov. career tool built for the military veteran community. This is from the 16th of July by Candy Tillman, the managing co-founder of 50 Strong. And then they have their caveat, the sharing of any non-VA information does not constitute an endorsement of products and services on the part of the VA. Veterans should verify the information with the organization offering. 50 Strong, and that's 50STRONG, offers free, easy-to-access tools to help veterans, spouses, service members, and military-affiliated students connect directly with leading employers of many shapes and sizes. Tools include virtual networking events held nearly every week. These casual virtual events bring together military talent and recruiters from leading companies. More than 94% of attendees say they would recommend it to others. Join the events at any time, and that's available at www.50-strong.us. So that's like 50 strong, but with a hyphen between the 50 and strong, and /upcoming-events. Opportunity Marketplace Job Board. The 50 Strong Job Board updates daily with SkillBridge Pathways, Student Veteran Pathways, paid training opportunities, and thousands of direct hire options. The job board is updated daily based on input from employers, and that's that same website, www.50-strong.us/marketplace. Virtual Mentoring Hub. Sometimes a quick conversation can make all the difference. 50 Strong offers a flexible virtual platform connecting job seekers with mentors from employer sponsors and broader industry community. Military-affiliated job seekers and students can get guidance on their transition, insight into different industries, or preparing for interviews. A mission rooted in community. 50 Strong isn't just a platform, it's a community collaborative. The 50 Strong team works closely with employers, education institutions, government agencies, and community organizations to strengthen the ecosystem that surrounds military-connected job seekers. It's an approach built on the belief that strong career outcomes happen when strong employers and strong talent connect directly. All employers and military-affiliated job seekers and students can visit www.50-strong.us to explore 50 Strong's tools. And that's career tool built for the military veteran community. Well, you've been listening to Weekly Reveille here on Sun Sounds of Arizona with your volunteer reader, Chuck Kaufman. I'd like to thank you for joining me for this Thursday edition of Weekly Reveille and remind you that you can listen to Weekly Reveille any day of the week by going to the Sun Sounds of Arizona website at sunsounds.org or by downloading the Sun Sounds of Arizona app for your iPhone or iPad from the Apple App Store or from the Google Play Store for your Android phone or tablet. And you can always listen to Sun Sounds of Arizona streaming on your Amazon Dot or Echo.